Welcome back to the Burrowshire Podcast, the podcast where we burst all of the stereotypes about millennials, such as that they hate books, that they're addicted to technology, that they spend all day playing video games. Of course, Father Blake, we just did do an episode on video games, so in part, I guess we're partially fulfilling that stereotype.
Yeah, I think I'm affirming that stereotype pretty well.
I'm Brandon Vaught, one of the co-hosts, and of course, I'm here with my best friend, the other co-host, Father Blake Britton. Father Blake, always good to see you.
Good to see you as well, my brother.
Speaking of friendship and best friends, today we're going to be talking about the topic of true friendship. Now, this is something that was in the back of our minds way back when we first conceptualized this podcast, because we wanted this podcast, if nothing else, to be a display of true friendship. So we wanted every episode to have this dimension of entering into true friendship, but we had also planned on doing an episode specifically on that topic. But then after we launched the first few episodes, Father Blake, I was surprised by the number of comments where people were asking us about different topics they wanted us to cover, and how many times did we see friendship, developing friendships, how do we find friends? It seems to be a pervasive interest among listeners to this podcast. But then even more than that, you've shared with me that at your parish and your ministry with young adults and millennials and Gen Zers, this is a pervasive desire to be able to find good, healthy, deep, true friendships. Are you seeing that desire among our generation?
Most certainly. So you see it in general. There are numerous studies that have come out about millennials and Gen Zers detailing one of the unmet needs of those generations is deep, substantial friendships. But also within the Christian context, in my own pastoral ministry, I do a lot of counseling specifically of young adults and teens who are saying they long for friendships that are lasting, friendships that really nourish their souls. So this is a topic that's very important for our generation, and a topic I think will help us as we move forward in the life of the church.
So during this conversation, we want to do a couple things. First, we want to define true friendship. And to do that, we're going to look at friendship before Christ and friendship after Christ. If Christ is the pinnacle or the hinge of history, then he changed something when it comes to every aspect of our culture, but particularly friendship. And so we're going to look at pre-Christian thinkers on friendship, people like Plato and Aristotle and Cicero. But then what did Christ bring to friendship? How did he raise friendship to a new level? What does a true Christian friendship look like? So that's a general overview of how the discussion is going to flow. So Father Blake, let's start off with natural friendship, if you will. So this would be friendship as understood by any person of reason and goodwill. There's no religious dimension. How would some of the great pre-Christian thinkers have understood friendship?
There are numerous examples, but immediately there are three that come to mind, and you mentioned them a little bit earlier. Plato, Aristotle, and Cicero. Plato and Aristotle are Greek philosophers, and Cicero, of course, is a Roman thinker, political philosopher. Aristotle and Plato, in particular, speak about friendship as being rooted in objective truth. So in their mind, when they discuss a relationship between two persons, it's not just how we typically would think of friendship being that we have mutual interest, or we happen to like the same movies, or we happen to like the same video games. But rather, to Plato, Aristotle was about this capacity with one another to identify the deeper truths of life, this desire within each other's hearts to guide one another and to walk with one another into the realm of truth. Cicero will later build upon this as well, and he adds a very fascinating characteristic to this notion from Aristotle and Plato. Cicero asserts that not only should there be a joint desire for objective truth, for understanding what the greatest truth of life is, but there also needs to be a unitive understanding of divinity. And Cicero will speak about this understanding, of course, from the Roman pantheon, so from the Greco-Roman gods. But of course, Augustine will later on pick this up, which I know we'll talk about later in the episode. He'll pick up from Cicero talking about divinity and highlight that speaking to Jesus Christ. But these are the first three major thinkers in the ancient world to really discuss at length friendship and what it means to have a friendship. So you see this joint desire for the truth and to really reach into the objective realm of being.
I think for most of us, most of our friendships are not elevated to that level. They're based around shared interest mostly, you know? So I'm thinking here of the majority of my friendships in life. They're either based around a shared love for books or a shared love for technology, you know, people in my community that are interested in the same things. And I want to be clear that we're not discounting those friendships. They're all good and they all participate in the good. But I think what Plato, Aristotle, and Cicero are hitting on is that there are varying degrees of friendship, or to change the metaphor, there's various levels of depth. And if you want to attain the highest degree of friendship or the deepest level of friendship, then you have to have your friendship rooted in and directed toward something more substantial than just, hey, we like watching the same TV show, or we like the same sports team, or we like playing the same games together.
Right. You and I were speaking before the episode began about wrestling. So let's say that according to Plato,
and not WWE wrestling. So we have to add a level of sophistication here. This is Greco-Roman wrestling.
It's Greco-Roman wrestling. I mean, this is the Burrowshire podcast after all. Oh my goodness. But so we were talking about wrestling beforehand. And how in the ancient world, let's say that you had two people that really enjoyed Greco-Roman wrestling. Well, Plato and Aristotle would say that in itself is a good, enjoying the sport, but that's not acquiring the highest level of friendship. The way that you acquire the highest level of friendship is you're able to recognize the deeper good that attracts you to that particular sport with your friend. So in as far as, let's say that you're attracted to how athletic the person is, or how they're able to pin the other person, and you just think that's really cool and really masculine, and that's why you like wrestling. Well, that's good. But also, are you able to recognize within this wrestling the form of what it really means to be human? And of course, for Plato and Aristotle, they would take that into the realm of the Greek gods. So Apollo, Artemis, Zeus, could you see within them this ideal of what it means to be human? And then what out of that virtue really stirs your own soul, the virtue of discipline, of devotion, of this love for something higher than myself and sacrifice and wanting to become a good athlete. So these are the things that really attract us to wrestling, not just the superficial aspect of two people pinning each other.
I'm trying to think of other good examples of friendship at the natural level, but at this higher degree. And it seems to me that a friendship based around, say, your favorite sports team. Like, I'm a diehard Orlando Magic fan. I have a bunch of Orlando Magic friends. We could sit and watch games and talk about stats and players all day. That's kind of like the lowest level of friendship, this mutual shared interest that, frankly, is pretty trivial. You know, it's just something that we enjoy to pass time. But then you move up and say, I don't have any close like gym buddy type friends, but we all know people that, you know, they work out together or they train together for a marathon or a half marathon. And in that case, you're pushing each other to some level of physical excellence. So now you're up a higher level because you have a more substantial good that you're encouraging each other to achieve. And then an even higher level than that, I think of people in the military and the bonds that people develop being in a foxhole together or having some shared mission. Now you are mutually linked in the pursuit of some great good, whether it be sacrifice, justice, loyalty, fraternity. So you go a step higher even than the gym buddies or the workout buddies. And so I think what Plato and Aristotle and Cicero affirm resonates with most of us, that there's levels of friendship, and the higher you go among those levels depends on the mutual good that you two are pursuing together.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And this ability also to recognize those goods within some of the more superficial activities. So going to your Orlando Magic example, so we enjoy watching basketball together, or is it football? What sport is that? No, it's
just, oh, don't even start with me. We might have to re-record this episode.
So we enjoy watching basketball because we enjoy the sport of basketball, but also we like this activity. We really enjoy the good that we're drawn to in this activity is teamwork, is community, is fraternity, is this ability to be with one another and to share in this mutual joy. So they are the deeper goods. And it makes the friendship that much more rich if we're able to recognize those goods and that is what's actually attracting us to them. The example that I like to use is if you're in a room with all the lights off, everything in the room is exactly the same way it would be if all the lights were on, but you can't appreciate it because the lights are off. But if the lights turn on, you can actually see what's inside of the room. You could see the details, the color of the wall, the different furniture. It's the same thing when the light of objective truth and the light of deeper goods and that ability to recognize deeper goods are in a friendship. Everything potentially within a friendship can be deep and profound, but only if the lights are on, only if you're able to really see around you and identify those different aspects of the friendship and the deeper goods.
Well, in many ways, 2,000 years ago, the light switch was flicked because Christ, the revelation of God, came into the world and lifted up friendship to a whole new level. I think of back in the early 20th century, H.G. Wells, the great sci-fi writer, he wrote a couple of books. It was a series titled The Outline of History, and it was basically a history of the Western world. And for him, the high points were Rome and Greece, of course, and then things kind of went dark and mellow for many centuries until finally the Renaissance, the Enlightenment, the modern period. Now we've reached the pinnacle of human excellence. But in response to that theory, our mutual hero and friend, G.K. Chesterton, came out with his own book titled The Everlasting Man, and it had two parts. The first part was essentially before Christ, showing how all of the ancient philosophies and religions foreshadowed the coming of Christ. And then after that, how everything since then has illuminated and reflected the radiance of Christ. So Christ is the hinge point of history. Christ is the light that illuminates everything, both past and future. And I think all of that applies to this topic of friendship too, that something definitively changed once Christ entered the world. Now, we could do a whole podcast on Christ's own teachings about friendship and his ethical system for relationships, but I do want to move a few centuries forward here and spend most of our time on the teachings of St. Augustine. St. Augustine is so meaningful and important to the both of us, and he wrote prolifically on the topic of friendship. He had many deep Christian friends after his conversion. He thought about friendship from so many different dimensions. So let's talk a little bit about what Augustine had to say about friendship. So give us maybe an overview.
Yeah, Augustine, of course, one of the great thinkers of all history, a man who was so incredible in his ability for self-reflection. And just a quick side note for our listeners and viewers, this is a gift which we are in desperate need of recultivating, the gift of self-reflection. Augustine, as well as other saints, had this masterful ability to really reflect on the different experiences of their lives, their thoughts, feelings, and desires, and then to learn from them. And friendship was no exception. Augustine had several friendships throughout the course of his life, but after his conversion to Christianity, these friendships, of course, blossomed into something much more profound. And also he acquired a few new Christian friends, namely Ambrose, Jerome, and then his best friend, who was named Alypius of Thagaste. He was the bishop of the coinciding diocese next to Hippo. It was only about a 60-mile journey from the diocese of Hippo, where Augustine himself was the bishop, so they would frequently spend time with one another. In his reflections upon the friendship with Alypius, the joy that he would feel in his heart when he was around him, the happiness that and sort of fervor that he would receive from having conversations with him, Augustine develops four different definitions of friendship, or four different aspects of a true Christian friendship. And these four aspects are love, confidence, frankness, and prayer. Love, confidence, frankness, and prayer. Love. When he mentions love, Augustine is very adamant on reaffirming that this must be first and foremost a love of God. Any true friendship has to be rooted in Christ, has to be rooted in a heart that is deeply seeking the Lord. And in this way, so mysteriously, you actually come to meet your best friend many years before you meet them in person. I know that at least we found this in our own friendship, Brandon. I would say frequently that you and I have met many times spiritually before we met physically. And what I mean by that is, in our mutual desire for Christ, even years before we met one another, in our mutual desire for Christ, our hearts were already being hewed, if you will, for a good Christian friendship for them when they finally met in person. So this love for God is absolutely foundational. If we're not trying to become saints on our own, then we won't be able to have friends who are saints. friends who also have that mutual love. So love of God, and of course, this love of God will transfer into the love of the friend himself or herself. Now, before we go on, I think it'd be important to clarify that word love, because it happens to be really restricted nowadays. So I'm wondering, Brandon, if you wouldn't mind elaborating a little bit on what we mean when we say love, as opposed to maybe what the world means when it says love.
Yeah, I think when most people hear that friendship depends on love, would say, well, of course, you know, of course I love my friends. But for most of us, for most of our friends, when we say we love our friends, we typically mean we're gratified by them. You know, we enjoy being around them. We have good feelings about them. But the Christian definition of love is to will the good of the other. So it's not a feeling or a desire. It's an act of the will. It's something that you do. And the specific thing that you do is you orient your behavior toward the good of the other. So when I say I love Father Blake, it's not just saying I enjoy his presence, which I do. It's not saying I have good feelings when we're together. I do. It's saying I want the good for him. And in this case, we both recognize the summum bonum, the greatest good, as God. I want to draw him into communion with God. That's the good I will for him, and that's how I love him. I think today in so many relationships, not just friendships, but in marriages, in other romantic relationships, even relationships between parents and children, there's been this regrettable reduction of love to just emotivism, to just emotional feelings, instead of recognizing that love is something you do. It's an act of the will. And I think Augustine recognized that. You see it in the Confessions after his conversion. The way that he interacts with these new Christian friends and then these other friends that kind of converted along with him, they're all striving together to draw each other into holiness. They're all willing the good of each other. And I think that's what he had in mind when he said friendship must be rooted in love.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And this love is something that is free. This love is something that also becomes the flame of the friendship itself. It becomes that driving factor that lets it never lose its vigor. Here's another problem in a lot of contemporary friendships, that sometimes it becomes stale and stagnant. Well, that's because it isn't fed by the everlasting man, as Chesterton would say. At its root is not Christ. At its root is not this desire for the Lord. At root, it's not this living word in this great adventure that we call Christianity. And therefore, it loses its flame. It will stop stoking the fires of true friendship, because that immortal love is not serving as its foundation. So love is the first characteristic of a true friendship, according to St. Augustine. The second is confidence. And when he says confidence, what he means by that is trust. So if your friend has a love of God, which means that they're desiring holiness, and they have a love for you, which means that they are desiring your ultimate good, they're willing the good for you, then that means you're able to trust them. That means that this is a soul in whom you should be able to confide your whole mind, heart, body, and soul. Augustine does give a warning here, and I would give the same warning to our listeners and viewers. This has to be tested over time. He's very adamant on that. We can't just immediately open up our hearts to people. I've seen this a couple times, especially as I counsel middle schoolers over at my school, that, you know, they have best friends when they're in sixth and seventh grade, and they'll share some really personal things with these friends. And of course, it's on social media 2 minutes later, you know, or they go and they whisper it to another girl in the class or to another boy in the class, and it becomes something very hurtful. Well, that's because they're still learning how to be prudent with sharing their heart, prudent with sharing their emotions. And that's one of our duties as formators and as educators, is to help them understand the appropriate ways in which to disclose the intimacy of our hearts. After that time period of testing has gone through, when he says testing, he doesn't mean to play tricks, or he doesn't mean to try to, you know, put the person to the test. But once they've proven themselves as a trustworthy person, once they prove themselves as someone who really loves you and desires your true good and loves God and is desiring holiness, slowly but surely, it's very important for us to start opening our hearts to that person and giving ourselves away. St. John Paul II would speak about that so frequently, how what is most human is to give ourselves away, because we're made in God's likeness and image. And so in the unveiling of ourselves, this is the root of the Greek word for truth, by the way. Aletheia means to be unveiled. When Christ says, I am the way, the truth, and the life, he says, I am the one who is being unveiled before you. whenever we unveil our hearts to the other, whenever we're giving ourselves away, whenever we're putting ourselves and risking ourselves in the palm of another's hands, there's a profound joy and freedom that comes from that, especially when that giving away is respected. And it just makes the friendship all that much richer and all that much more profound.
I can't help but see a parallel here between true Christian friendship and Christian marriage, that in Christian marriage, there's that same gradual process of opening up, of unveiling. Eventually in marriage, you unveil your whole self, not just heart and soul, but body to your partner. Whereas in friendship, it's more on the level of spirit, soul, heart. But I remember the first few times we got together, I think on episode one, we talked about our first encounter. First, we met at this at a party at a mutual friend's house. But then the first real time we spent together was over here at Burrowshire. We sat in the library behind me. And man, we talked for what, 6 hours, 7 hours?
At least.
And it ranged over all sorts of topics. But, you know, we shared a little bit about our inner hearts and our spiritual life and our inner thoughts and things like that. But there was, you know, a healthy holding back. But then the next time a little more, the next time a little more, and to the point where I feel I've been, you know, utterly transparent with you, and I know you have with me, and there's such a liberating feeling there where it's like, you know me and you love me. You know, there's that same dynamic with a husband and a wife, but it's different between two friends. It's the intimate unveiling and the intimate blossoming that happens over time is unique from the type of unveiling and the type of vulnerability and transparency between friends.
Absolutely. And what you're referring to, Augustine will refer to about his best friend, Alipius, specifically in a letter to Pope Boniface, which is quite wonderful. I have here a book which I discovered abandoned in a library many, many years ago. And I'm happy now for my slight addiction of rummaging through used bookstores.
Slight addiction? Did I hear the word? Did I hear a qualification?
Listen, I'm getting over it.
That's what all addicts say. It's just, you know, it's a slight addiction.
I can stop whenever I want. Okay, so this wonderful book, which is called Friends and Friendship for St. Augustine. Unfortunately, the book is out of print, and so it's a little difficult to find. Like I said, I only found mine because I was rummaging through a old library and they had a free book section and this was there, thank God. But in this book, a religious sister goes through the theology of the friendship of St. Augustine and St. Alipius. But I just want to read an excerpt from one of St. Augustine's letters about Alipius and what he says to Pope Boniface. He says, "My most reverend father, my friend Alipius, it can be said of him that anything Alipius says is what Augustine says, and that our souls are united as if they were one soul cast into two bodies." St. Basil and St. Gregory will also say the same thing in their wonderful letter to one another. And this is the case when you have trust and confidence with another heart. This is the case referring to what you were just speaking about in the love of a friendship, Brandon, is whenever you have this kind of trust between friends, it becomes this unity that's so profound, and there's a freedom and a new kind of richness that comes to your personality from that. And one more gift that comes from that kind of confidence and trustworthiness is faith in humanity. Faith in humanity. I'm amazed by the amount of people who are losing faith in humanity and the goodness of man. I remember Chesterton speaking about Chesterton says, "I'm the only fool on earth that still believes in the goodness of man." And I'm one of those fools too, but it's because I have friendships. It's because I have you, brother. It's because I see that there are good human persons. I see the people in my parish. I see my pastor. You know, I see my bishop. And when I have these kind of relationships, it gives me this confidence again that there are good people here and there are people worth living for. Like Sam says to Frodo in The Two Towers, there's some goodness in this world and it's worth fighting for. Well, friendship is one of those avenues that reaffirm that kind of goodness. So confidence is very essential to that. The third aspect that Augustine brings up is frankness. This is perhaps one of the most difficult aspects of a friendship. It's only difficult if you lack confidence and love. So not all friendships have confidence and love, but what Augustine defines as frankness is the truth, this willingness to speak the truth, even if that truth may be hurtful to the other person. we know that sometimes our friends might make choices or our friends might do things that maybe hurt us, wound us, bother us, or may even be taxing on our particular friendship. Let's say that one of our friends is struggling with a particular sin or a particular vice. Maybe one of our friends is maybe just has a personality trait that needs to be continued to be refined and grow in holiness. Sometimes we play the game of avoidance, especially millennials and Gen Zers, because we're a technological generation. So we much rather send an email than make a phone call. Like in an email, I'll be really tough, you know, or on social media or a tweet, you know, I'll let you have it. But in real life, I'd be like, oh, how you doing? Sort of smile. That won't do in a friendship. In a true friendship, there has to be this willingness to say, brother, you know, I love you. Brother, you know that I desire your holiness. And for that reason, I have to share this with you. Like, this really hurt me, what you said, or I really don't think that's the best thing for you or for your family or whatever it may be. And so I know that you and I have had those kind of conversations before, and they've been really beneficial. They have not hurt the friendship at all. When you have two hearts that are humble and that are united in that love of Christ and desire for holiness, it won't break the friendship. It's only going to strengthen it.
Yeah, and I'm trying to think of specific examples of that in our friendship that would be appropriate to share in the podcast. But I'm thinking too, maybe at kind of a light.
Remember that one time, Brand, that you robbed the bank that I promised I would tell no one ever happened?
I thought you would just affirm me in my greed and my theft, but instead you called me out on it. No, but I think even at a lower level than, say, calling somebody out on vice or something like that, we've had just disagreements, whether they be theological or philosophical, but our friendship not only allows disagreements of opinion or disagreements of views, but in some ways we thrive in those occasions because it generates more discussion and deeper thought and brings us each closer to the truth. Whereas a lot of other friendships I have that don't have the grounding of love and confidence, frankness about disagreement of opinion is hard. You know, most of us, for most of our relationships, just have a live and let live type of mentality. Like, they believe that, I believe this, you know, no big deal, I don't want to get into it. But the deeper you go in friendship, the more open you are to having frank disagreement and the more healthy such dialogue is.
Yes, yes. Yeah, and that's so vital, once again, for helping the friendship to deepen and helping that confidence and that love to grow. And it does stoke the fire of intellectualism as well. There have been times when you've criticized some of my theological points and you've challenged me. And as opposed to me being so vehemently attached to my theological opinion that I become defensive and closed off and think, who's Brandon to question me? Instead, I trust you. I know that you're a man of prayer. And because of that, I'm willing to listen. And there are times when you've corrected me and you've been right and I've been wrong. And so And that will be one of the only times you ever hear me say that. But
in this instance, you're right in saying that I'm right. So I agree with you.
You were supposed to say that I was right sometimes.
That would not be frank.
So whenever you corrected me, I now grew in my own understanding of the truth. I grew in my own understanding of Christ and of his wisdom, his goodness, his holiness, and that helped me grow as a man, as a Catholic, and as a priest.
Yeah.
Frankness is really, really key to that.
Likewise.
And the fourth point, sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to echo that and say, of course, the same thing is true in the opposite direction. So it's not one-sided here.
Thank you. I needed to hear that. I didn't need to hear that. I was okay. And the last characteristic of a true Christian friendship, Augustine, of course, with his spiritual genius and insight, he says is prayer. Prayer. If we are rooted in love of God and that desires now the goodness and the holiness of the other, which leads to trusting confidence in the other's desire for holiness, which leads to an openness and frankness of speaking with one another, all those three are tied together, Augustine says, by the act of prayer. First, personal prayer. Privately, apart from our friend, we need to have that silent time before Christ so that he can form us and so that he can mold our hearts after his own sacred heart. So having time for personal private prayer on a daily basis is essential to fostering good, healthy, deep friendships. And then, of course, praying with your friend. I have to say, one of the joys of my heart, Brandon, is whenever you and I pray the Liturgy of the Hours. It's such a profound moment that you really see what the basis of our friendship is. When we're united together as brothers, offering a sacrifice of praise to Christ Jesus the Lord through his bride, the church, in the unity of the Holy Spirit to God the Father. Because it's at those moments when we pray with one another as brothers, it's at those moments when you really see the purpose of our friendship in the first place. It gives direction and orientation to our relationship that would not be there otherwise. If that prayer is not there and we lose focus, what happens in a lot of friendships is that it becomes something called codependent. And codependent relationships are incredibly dangerous, because what happens now is that you're putting your emotional, psychological, spiritual, and existential worth in the other person, as opposed to standing side by side with that person, putting it in Christ as our hope and joy. Codependent relationships always are strangled and suffocated and eventually lead to resentment and bitterness between those two friends, and sometimes even a complete breaking off of that relationship. Whereas having a friendship that's rooted in prayer orients us towards the greater good.
Mm, that's so beautifully said. I think of some of my most indelible experiences of praying with you, and what comes to mind, we've prayed together here at the Borough-Shire Library, and every time we get together we do, but then also at your parish, in your chapel, you know, we've prayed, and I'm thinking back to those scenes, and the two of us will be sitting next to each other with our breviaries, but not looking at each other. We're gazing on the tabernacle or toward the altar, and in some ways it embodies that sense that the deepest friendship is not two friends facing each other, but toward this transcendent third, toward Christ. That very physical orientation itself is embodying what friendship is supposed to be about.
There's the distinction between erotic romantic relationships and platonic philosophical relationships. So romantic marital relations, and then also having this friendship kind of relationship. In romantic relationships, it's the husband and the wife facing one another. They're gazing into each other's eyes, and each other become that icon, and through the giving of each other, both physically and spiritually, they themselves become an icon of the love of Christ. Whereas in friendship, you don't look into each other's eyes. Rather, you stand side by side gazing into the eyes of Christ. This is where we get that ancient notion of brothers in arms. Brothers in arms never looked at each other. They stood by each other. They would make a shield wall. This is where the phrase comes from, to be brothers in arms, is when you would lock arms with each other on the battlefield and make a shield wall against the approaching enemy. Well, whenever you're brothers in arms with Christ, you lock arms with one another to make a shield wall against the vices of the world and to keep your eyes focused on Christ so that he could be your guiding principle.
All right. Well, we've spent a good amount of time reflecting more in the abstract on friendship at the natural level, especially before Christ and the great Greek and Roman philosophers. Then we looked at Christian friendship through the lens of St. Augustine and his four duties or four aspects of friendship, which were love, confidence, frankness, and prayer. I want to spend the rest of this discussion getting a little bit more practical, illustrating some of the principles that we've been discussing, and then answering what's probably the most burning question from viewers and listeners. I know it would have been for me if I had listened to this podcast a few years ago, which is, how do I find and develop friendships like that? People think, all the things that you're describing, I want, I crave that. I want friendships like that, but I don't know how to begin. How do I find somebody that's compatible with that type of friendship? And then how do I foster it and develop it? So we're going to spend a good amount of time talking about that. Before we shift gears, though, Father Blake mentioned that great book on friendship within the theology of Augustine. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, wasn't it Sister Maria's doctoral dissertation?
So it was.
Yeah.
So Sister Marie Thomas Aquinas. It was her doctoral dissertation, which I'm like, talk about a prestigious name.
Sister Maria Aquinas. That's going to be the next name of my next daughter. But another classic book in the field is Spiritual Friendship. It's by St. Alred of Reveaux. He was a 12th century abbot of a great English Cistercian abbey. And this book is a beautiful reflection on Christian friendship. It's sort of written in a Socratic or Ciceronian dialogue where Alred is talking with a couple of other friends about friendship. So it's a very easy read. It's not abstract philosophy. It's written in a conversational style, but beautiful reflections, and probably sort of the foundational classic on the topic of spiritual friendship or Christian friendship. So if you want to go more and you can't find the Augustine book, which is out of print, unfortunately, check out this book, Spiritual Friendship by St. Alred of Ravoux. I'll link to it in the show notes here.
And another suggestion that I would make is look up online, and you can find them from various different websites, the letters written between some of these classic friendships of history, specifically the Christian ones. So just to give a few names, Saints Basil and Gregory, very important friendship. Saint Augustine and Saint Alipius, Saint Ignatius of Loyola and Saint Francis Xavier. The letters between these two persons are still preserved, thank God. And so definitely go out and find those different letters online and read through some of these first primary resources of friendships. And I think you'll be shocked at how they speak about one another. I think that you'll really be blown away, because it's a kind of language that we've lost in modern culture that I deeply believe needs to be reclaimed. It's a kind of language that really constitutes what a friendship is all about. You'll hear, for example, Basil speak of Gregory as his brother soul, whom he desires to greater holiness than himself, whose greatest joy was to only share in each other's company with Christ Jesus the Lord. That's just amazing. I don't know how many friendships there are like that anymore. So reading these kind of friendships in these different letters, I think, will also help inspire us ourselves and give us examples of what our friendships ideally should strive towards. Even if they don't start there, that's okay. But little by little, to eventually reach those kind of levels.
All right, so let's move into some of the more illustrative aspects of friendship, where we maybe go a little deeper into our friendship between the two of us, but also put some flesh on some of the principles that we've discussed so far. So one of them, which was central to Augustine, is that Christ must be the center of any true Christian friendship. And I'm reminded of the book that I just held up, Spiritual Friendship. In the very first line, here's what Elred says: "Here we are, you and I, and I hope a third, Christ, is in our midst." So it's the essential mark of Christian friendship that Christ is present. If Christ isn't there, then at best you're at the highest level of natural friendship. But it's not the true, deep Christian friendship that we're all hungering for. And also, another anecdote that comes to mind, back when Bishop Barron was Father Barron, he was the rector at Mundelein Seminary. And when he was there, Mundelein hosted an annual basketball tournament where seminarians came from all the seminaries across the country. Each seminary would kind of field its own basketball team. They'd all come to Chicago to Mundelein, and they'd have a tournament. It was fun. It was not, I mean, it was competitive, but it was not, aggressive. These are all future priests. These are all brother seminarians. And one year we filmed a little documentary centered around this thing. It was like a 10-minute film it was titled Heroic Priesthood. It was about the priesthood and the seminary life. And one thing that stuck out to me ever since then, this was 5 years ago, 7 years ago, was one of the seminarians said, "The thing that I love most about all these seminarians coming here is that even though I've never met most of them, don't even know their names, the moment that they arrive, we come together in the chapel, I feel like we're best friends because we have a mutual best friend." And he said, "The more that I know Christ, the more that they know Christ, the more we know each other, because my soul is aligning itself to Christ and likewise with the other person. So our souls are converging toward the same form." And I found that with the two of us, that the deeper I go in prayer, the deeper I go in spiritual reading and self-reflection and love of Christ, the inevitable deeper I grow to you, because we're both converging toward the same source.
And that the source of our friendship, once again, is not each other. The source of our friendship remains Christ. The first group of people that I think of who epitomize that are the 12 apostles. These 12 men who could not have been more diametrically opposed to one another. You even had zealots there with devout sons of Israel, with tax collectors, you know, all these different kinds of personalities come together. But what brought them, what bonded them in brotherhood? Christ. Christ bonded them in brotherhood, to the point that John, when he picks up the letter, hearing that Peter had been executed in the city of Rome, he weeps for love of his brother. I mean, that's only possible for Christ. That's only possible through Christ. So having Christ, that bond is really, really important.
I think another obvious sign of Christian friendship is that it's always fruitful. It always bears fruit outward, that it's not insular to what you just said. It's not two people facing each other. It's facing a transcendent third, Christ, and therefore bearing wider fruit. And I think of our own friendship. You know, through our friendship, we've, I think, encouraged each other to produce more fruit than we would have individually. We can't get into all the details here, but for example, you're writing a book, which, you know, we're constantly talking about and bouncing ideas off of each other. I've been writing a book or two, and likewise in the other direction, I'm constantly discussing that with you. This podcast is an exhibit of this friendship blossoming into something greater for the world. I think of once a quarter, so every 3 months, we have a bunch of families come over to Borough-shire, and we have a big celebration. You come and celebrate Mass, you hear confessions and do spiritual direction, and all of that emerged out of our friendship and out of us asking, you know, how can we bring this thing that God has given us to other people, to other families? You know, how can we broaden it out into the community? And beyond the two of us, I think of other friendships. The one that immediately comes to mind is C.S. Lewis and J.R.R. Tolkien. Tolkien, the lifelong Catholic, Lewis converted to Christianity later in life, but it was after their conversions that their literary fruitfulness exploded through both the two of them, but then their Inklings literary group that met there at the Eagle and Child Pub in Oxford, that they were mutually enriching. This friendship, you could say, helped inspire Lord of the Rings, the Chronicles of Narnia, the works of Owen Barfield and Charles Williams. If you want a good study of the fruitfulness of that literary group, there's a book called The Fellowship, which looks at each of those figures and how their friendships help give rise to their literary work. But I think that's just a bedrock principle of Christian friendship, that a sign of true Christian friendship is that it's fruitful, that it bears fruit.
I think about the prophet Ezekiel in this beautiful text when he speaks about the temple of the east gate, and from it are flowing the mighty rivers. Of course, St. Augustine will later on recognize that east gate of the temple being the pierced side of Jesus Christ and the blood and water flowing out to be the river. And Ezekiel sees in that vision along the river trees. These trees have rooted themselves to the river. And because the river is flowing so super abundantly, constantly, the trees are drinking up the rich water all the time. And what do the trees produce? Leaves that are used for medicine and fruits that are taken year round. When a Christian friendship is rooted in the great river of Christ's love, its leaves are used for medicine. It becomes a source of healing for the world, and its fruits are year round. It is always producing spiritual fruits for the world to enjoy.
Another good characteristic of true Christian friendship is that it's not competitive, except in the sense that we just heard from Basil and Gregory in out-sanctifying or out-virtuing each other. And I think of our own friendship. You know, both of us, you know, have intellectual goals and agendas, and we have projects and plans and desires, and, you know, none of that is competitive between us. I'm not trying to best you in any area of life, with one exception, and that's in the realm of sanctification. But in an ironic twist, that is where we both encourage each other the most. I want to out-sanctify you, but you're encouraging me to do that. And the reverse is true as well. You're pursuing the greatest heights of holiness, but I want that for you too as well. And so the only area where we're quote-unquote competitive is in the best things, virtue, holiness, sanctification. Whereas I think, you know, in all other types of friendships, there's always an element of ego. There's always an element of competition. What will the other person think of me? Will they judge me? Am I less than their expectations? Am I exceeding their expectations? I think our friendship has grown to the point where there's none of that. And again, there's almost an energetic, delightful stimulation that comes when you know I don't have to put on airs. I'm not competing or impressing, trying to impress my friend. The only thing we're trying to do is to encourage each other to holiness.
Envy is most certainly among the more restrictive poisons in the well of a friendship. When the one friend starts to accomplish something, when the one friend starts to achieve something, when the one friend gets married and you're still single, when the one friend enters to religious life or the seminary and you're still trying to find out your vocation, there is a temptation there to say, how come they get that and I don't get that? And that's the enemy will enter in immediately and try to poison that vineyard. He is the snake in the garden of friendship. So I would warn, please do not let that poison enter in. The joy should always be the friend's greater accomplishment. And absolutely, Brandon, I would echo everything you just said. This is the case with our friendship. There's never once, I can say this very frankly and honestly, there's never once I've ever felt a semblance of envy because I've been too busy being proud and joyful at your accomplishments. I've been too busy. My heart's been too consumed with the joy and the beauty of your family, of your ministry, the Word on Fire, of the holiness of your marriage, of the greatness of your fatherhood. Recognizing those good things, there's no room for envy within my heart. There's no room for any sort of anger or bitterness. All that there is light. It's the light of Christ. And that's the same, thank God, in my other relationships, even pastorally throughout the parish. And I thank the Lord for that great grace, and I pray that He maintains that in the years to come. But whenever we allow our hearts to be filled with gratitude and joy, there's no room for bitterness, resentment, or envy. And that's something that's going to be very important for us to remain aware of if we want to have a good and healthy friendship. So, Brandon, as I look down upon you from the heights of my own holiness, just know, just know that I'm always summing you up to achieve
them. I'm so far below. You can't envy me because you can't even see that far down to the level of Mount Purgatory.
Like, is that him down there? No, but all joking aside, it's this wonderful, to carry on the illusion of looking down from the heights. I definitely don't look down in any way. Rather, you and I are both mountain climbing together. You know, we're rappelling up this great mountain.
We're both looking up. I'm not looking down, comparing, judging, measuring up. If you have your sight set on something higher, you don't have time for those types of games.
Yep, absolutely. Verso lo alto, Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati, one of our mutual favorite saints. To the top, he would always say, to the top. Keep your eyes on the top, eyes on the prize. And so if your eyes are on the prize, they can't be on your friend's achievements.
Another sign of true Christian friendship, which again distinguishes it from just mere natural friendship, and you could say in some ways is kind of the turning point, is the ability to have healthy disagreements and where disagreements are expected and even welcome. Again, I think for most of my friendships, and I'm guessing this is true for most of our viewers and listeners, disagreement is not something that's attractive. You do not like want to go out to lunch or dinner with a quote unquote friend and just disagree with about things the whole meal. You know, it'd make for a pretty crummy meal. And that's because the friendship is at a lower level where you don't have the frankness, the trust, the love rooting it to allow disagreement to unfold. Whereas for us, I think of when we start getting deep into conversations about theology or philosophy, it's expected there's going to be disagreement. And in many ways, before the conversation begins, I'm kind of open to wherever the Spirit takes us, whether it's toward agreement or disagreement. It doesn't matter to me because in either direction, they're both like conducing toward the same end, which is toward ultimate truth. It's sharpening my mind. It's sharpening your mind. And so disagreement is almost a tool by which the Holy Spirit draws us toward the ultimate end of goodness and truth. And as an example here, I think of G.K. Chesterton, who we've mentioned many times before, and one of his close friends was George Bernard Shaw. Shaw yes. was the utter opposite of G.K. Chesterton, physically, spiritually, intellectually, just across the board. So Chesterton was very tall and big and portly, probably 350 plus pounds. George Bernard Shaw was a skinny as a stick Irishman. Chesterton loved to eat, loved to smoke. Shaw was a vegetarian and a teetotaler.
On that note, I have to just say a funny story between those two characters in particular. One time, Chesterton looked at Shaw and he said, if people were to watch you, they would think that England is in famine. And Shaw just as wittily responded back to him and said, yes, Mr. Chesterton, if they were to see you, they would think that you caused it.
I love that line.
And so it goes to show like that disagreement, but yet there was such a cordiality that existed there in that relationship.
Yeah, which is what I was driving at, is that these two guys traveled the country, putting on debates regularly throughout all of England. And what was distinct about their relationship was that they'd go on stage and disagree vigorously about whatever topic it was, the family, politics, religion, ethics, whatever. But then immediately afterward, they would join each other in the pub, and people who were in attendance for the debate would come and join them, and they'd be drinking and, you know, smacking their tankards together and laughing, and they'd be so joyful. For them, disagreement was not a hindrance to friendship. In some ways, you could say their whole friendship was rooted in their disagreement, because that disagreement caused intellectual vivacity, it caused life, it caused reflection. And so they thrived on disagreement. Now, obviously, this wasn't a Christian friendship. Bernard Shaw was an atheist. Chesterton was a Christian. But I think Chesterton, more than Shaw, brought to that relationship the dimension of Christian friendship, which is open to disagreement and allows the friendship to thrive despite it.
And nowadays, we don't have that very often, this ability to disagree politely and to disagree without egoism being involved. That's why our political field is so rambunctious, not just now, but traditionally it is. And outside of politics, even within our own church, sometimes there's this temptation between quote unquote liberal and quote unquote conservative, which are not even ecclesial, they're not Catholic categories, but we've forced those labels onto different people in the church. And you see this just vehement disagreement and almost sort of verbal violence that begins to take place. And then people won't speak to each other outside of argumentation. But that's never been what a true mature Christian and even a true mature intellectual relationship looks like. We should be able to disagree with those points and those facts, but then of course realize that casting our ego aside, here is this other human being who is also looking for the truth just as much as I am. We're both searching for the truth. We may be right or wrong about that truth, but at least our desire is looking for what is true. And that I can affirm and that I can recognize.
All right, let's look at one final aspect, and it's something we've hit on a couple times already, and it's that true Christian friendship reveals a shared mission. It's not just two people interested in the same things, which is 99% of our quote-unquote friendships. You know, we like the same sports team, we like the same hobby, we like the same food, we like to run together, work out together. You're interested in some passive topic or hobby or whatever. True Christian friendship, what's in common at root is a shared mission. You know, we've said it's a shared person, it's Christ, but Christ is the mission. The two of us, for example, our joint missions is to conform our lives to Christ and to help each other conform our lives to Christ. And again, it's like that type of friendship has so much more energy and force and excitement because you're going somewhere. You're not just congregating around this dead passive hobby or thing, which could grow, could fade. You know, you said earlier that we all notice sometimes our friendships may be dry, get dry, or they ebb and they flow. And I think about friendships centered around the Orlando Magic, my sports team. That happens every year during the off season. You know, I have friends online, I have friends offline that all we talk about is the Magic during the season. But then during the summer when basketball stops, those friendships kind of dry up and there's like nothing, there's no real point to them because that's all it's built on. It's this passive, passing dead thing. But if your friendship's rooted in mission, especially the mission of conforming yourself to Christ, that's eternal and alive and never deadening. And so your friendship can't help but move and go. There's no stopping it.
And this is a friendship that in the end lasts into eternity. Here is another point from St. Augustine, probably the most moving theological point that he makes, in my opinion, on his several theses about friendship. Augustine claims, that a true Christian friendship is a temporary participation in the heavenly kingdom. And thus it experiences phenomenological time. What that means is that Christian friendship, because it's sharing in divine truth, because it's striving for divine truth, is not bound to chronos, to our own time, to temporary time, but rather is bound to kairos. What that means is eternity. So what I do now, and I'll just give you a real example, Brandon, whenever you and I are at Borough Shire and we're having those 6-hour conversations, let me be honest in saying that it does not feel like 6 hours. And I'm sure all of us have experienced that in some way or another. When we're with someone, either family or friends, and we're hanging out, and we just look at our watch and we're like, what? It's 10:30 at night?
Oh, that's, what? Come on. 10:30 at night's the beginning of the conversation. We're like, what? It's 4 a.m.?
I was trying to give the illusion of responsibility, Brandon.
There is none. There is none.
So, but, you know, you look at your watch, yeah, more realistically, like, oh, it's 2 a.m., 3 a.m. And you're just amazed because you feel like your conversation just began. That's the signs now. Okay, there's something deeper here. There's a beauty that needs to be refined, and there's a goodness that needs to be focused on Christ. So having that chirological, as Augustine calls it, aspect of friendship is really important, but that's only possible by having that shared mission.
All right, well, let's spend the rest of this conversation talking about how to find and develop these sorts of friendships that we're talking about. Hopefully by now we've whetted your appetite so much that you hunger and crave these sorts of friendships. I think, Father Blake, reflecting back on how our friendship first started, for me, it was utter sheer grace. I wasn't searching for a friend of this type, to my own fault. I wasn't looking for the depth of friendship that we now share. God just gave it to me. He just brought you into my life. I mentioned we just, you know, met at this mutual friend's party and the friendship developed from there. But I know for you, it was a little different. And that was, I mean, it was so moving to me, whether it was the second or third or fourth time we got together. And it was very clear that the Lord had brought our hearts into such union. And you first revealed to me that you had actually been begging God in prayer to send you such a friend. And I was so moved by that. But then it made me regret not having done that myself and thinking what might have happened had I been more persistent in asking God to bring me such a friend. So would you agree that's like, if you want this gift, and it's a gift, it's a goodness, if you want something like that, the first step should be to ask the Father, the giver of all good gifts, to give it to you.
Absolutely. Yeah, this is something that I longed for many years. I was begging the Lord for deep friendships. And God, in his incredible generosity, later on in my life, blessed me with that gift. Now, let me say this to our audience. I suffered many years not having those kind of deep relationships. And that suffering was good for me, because I realized now in those times that the Lord was slowly forming my heart for what would become my best friend, for what would become these profound relationships that I now enjoy. But it took those years of asking the Father again and again, Lord, I just don't want a superficial friendship. Lord, I just don't want a group of guys I can hang out with and talk about football. You know, Lord, I want a brother in arms. I want a brother that I can grow in holiness with. I want friends who I can sit around with in a circle and speak heart to heart and allow our hearts to be mutually set on fire with love for you and for the salvation of souls. And after almost 10 years of asking for that, daily, through Eucharistic adoration, asking for that on a regular basis, I was begging the Lord to have someone like Ignatius and Francis Xavier or Augustine and Alipius, so much so that even my senior thesis, when I was getting my degree in philosophy, I was going to write it on Christian friendship. That's how much time I'd spent praying and studying for this. But I never wanted to force anything. You can't force a relationship. It has to organically develop. That's the way healthy friendships form. Only after nearly a decade of praying did the Lord finally bless me with that gift. And it was so worth the wait, because now it's blossomed into this field of grace that I could not be more grateful for. And it's expanded into of our friendship, Brandon, of course. But like you said, not just our friendship, but other friendships that we formed along the way. Deep, beautiful friendships that are avenues of grace that are now pouring over and gracing the lives of others. So the Lord has answered that prayer on my own heart super abundantly, in particular through our friendship, but also through other friendships, which are holy and beautiful.
You know, there's a lot of talk in Catholic circles among young adults and teenagers about praying for your future spouse. You know, Lord, protect them, prepare them, bring them to me, you know, give me a good husband or a good wife. And I think a lot of Catholics are comfortable with that sort of petition. But it's rare for us to beg for good friends. And part of the problem, and I want to spend a little time talking about this with you, is that we've collapsed all types of love into romantic love. And so there's probably, for example, some viewers and listeners who have listened to this conversation, and parts of it have probably made them uncomfortable because of the effusiveness and the level of love and intimacy that we talk to each other with. And usually that type of language is just reserved for boyfriends and girlfriends or for spouses. We're not used to talking that way and thinking that way about friendships. And there's a, I don't want to go down the whole avenue of how we got here and why we've got here, but I'm guessing you've sensed that too, that a lot of us in our generation, especially, and maybe even the generation younger than us, we feel uncomfortable about even talking about or thinking about loving or intimate or deep friendships because we're worried it's too close to romanticism. And that, you know, if I talk about, you know, my deep love and my deep friendship with Father Blake, that might be perceived as us being in a same-sex relationship, you know, or something like that, like a sexual relationship, not just a same-sex relationship. And so I think part of the preparation for finding a close, deep friend is working on your own self to get over the hump of uncomfortability and that type of language and relationship.
Most certainly, most certainly. This is why I encouraged our viewers to read some of those letters from Augustine and Alipius, Basil and Gregory, Ignatius and Francis. Because if you think how we're speaking with one another is in any way going over the top, then you'll be blown away by Alipius when he tells St. Jerome that Augustine's eyes are his eyes and his heart is his heart. You know, this is the way that they would speak about one another. And to, unfortunately, our lens nowadays, which has very much been clouded by an over-sexualization, or I should rather say a false sexualization, and an artificial form of romanticism, we would read those letters between Augustine and Alipius and think that there was something more there than there was, or something almost perverted or inappropriate there, when in reality, this is just the level of depth that they had as brothers and as friends. So I agree with you, especially men nowadays, because of an afeminization that's taking place in our culture. So there's an assault that's taking place on women themselves, an assault on feminine dignity, on feminine beauty. And as a reaction to that assault, there's been this overassertion of femininity into culture at the suppression of masculinity. And now you have generations of boys who do not feel comfortable being men. So they've had to sort of put on this machismo, or they go over to this overly effeminate side. Those are the two extremes we now have. Is this, there's this over sort of sense of manliness. I need to conquer things and, you know, eat raw meat and grow long beards. And then you have on the other side of it, this very feminine kind of masculinity. When in the reality, there's a beautiful balance between this that's authentic, true Christian masculinity. And that kind of Christian masculinity has the friendships which we're talking about. If we don't have those kind of friendships, then our masculinity really won't come to its fore. But it's not just true for men, it's true for women as well. Those kind of friendships are very important for women to also develop and to deepen and to not allow any sort of poisons to enter there.
All right, so tip number one, which is the most important one, is if you hunger for true Christian friendship, ask God to send you a good Christian friend. There's nothing better, no better advice that Father Blake and I could offer. That's how God brought the two of us together. But second is to prepare yourself. You need to develop a level of maturity when it comes to thinking about and talking about friendship so that when the opportunity comes, you're not put off by what other people are going to think about our relationship or how we talk about it or the level of depth we have. A third tip is to recognize that appearances and first impressions can be deceiving. And I think most of us know this when it comes to marital relationships. So, I mean, I know friends, and I'm sure most viewers and listeners do too, where the husband and the wife, when they first met, it was not love at first sight. You know, they thought, I don't even like this person. I don't like being around this person. But then over time, you know, things start to change, their perception shift. I just finished reading for the first time Pride and Prejudice by Jane Austen. And that's the basic fulcrum of the book, is you have these two somewhat prideful people, Mr. Darcy and Elizabeth Bennet, and their first impression of each other was, you know, he is so arrogant and she is so plain and obnoxious. But over the course of the novel, their perception shifts and they fall in love, they become best friends, and they get married. A similar dynamism happens a lot with close friends. Now, this wasn't the case with Father Blake and I. Father Blake and I hit it off right from the beginning, but I think of some of my other close friends in my inner circle. And I could think of a couple in particular where the first few times we met, I was not at all gravitating toward friendship with that person. They were just, you know, they had totally different interests. They were totally different personality type. But over time, the more substantial points of contact, namely our pursuit of holiness, our commitment to Christ, all that stuff, it makes all of those little shallow, trivial differences sort of fade away. And so maybe think right now, who are some people around you in your current circles that at first glance you might think, well, I would never want to hang out with that person or be their friend. But then when you look at a slightly deeper level and think, is this the type of person that I could maybe have the Augustine Alipius relationship with? I might not be buddies with them watching a game, but is there a potential for something at a deeper level there? And I think you'll be surprised.
Yes, always remain open to the Lord and His will. This is why prayer is so essential as well. So pray for the Lord to send you a good friend, a good Christian friend, or a group of good Christian friends. But then also ask Him for wisdom, prudence, and the eyes to identify them. Augustine's paradigm here of confidence and building trust will also be essential. So maybe you do hit it off with someone right off the bat. Don't pour out your whole mind, heart, body, and soul to them right away. Take some time to discern with them, because they may not actually be who they say they are. And that's not trying to criticize anyone or to be negative in any way. It's just saying the truth of life. We have to be very prudent about who we open our hearts to.
All right, let's maybe wind down with this. I'm going to ask you this as a question. Suppose somebody, you know, they meet a fellow Christian. They think, you know, we check some of the boxes that Father Blake and Brandon have discussed. There might be a potential for deep Christian friendship here. After the first or second get together, whether, you know, it's at a party or sporting event or however your friendship emerged, after you kind of cross those shallow levels, what are the next steps to developing it into something deeper? I'm trying to think of our own friendship, and for us, it kind of just, I don't know, it happened naturally, or you might say divinely. The Lord sort of just made it happen. But how do you, if you're in sort of shallow level waters, what should you practically do to maybe lead it a few steps further?
Well, you hit the nail on the head there when you spoke about it being natural. So in the end, remember that friendship is always organic. It's something that has to develop on its own. So I want to avoid trying to give sort of a list of things to do in order to deepen a friendship. For each person, it's going to be different. That being said, I will take a note from Cicero and what he says about friendship when he says that a true friendship, once you've identified a potential true friend, proximity and regularity is essential to fostering the relationship. What Cicero means by that is spending a good amount of time with the person. So reaching out, let's say, like after you and I met each other at that one get together for the house blessing, we exchanged information and then we went ahead and I texted you, we called, and then eventually we ended up hanging out at the house. You invited me over for dinner with the family. It was great. I had a great time playing with the kids and looking at the property. And then we went to the library and started talking. And that time, whenever we spoke, is when the real kindling of our friendship actually began. So it was taking that first step of reaching out. I know that may seem like a no-brainer, but some people may overlook that. If you really feel like, you know what, that when I was talking to that person, there was something awesome there. Like that was the kind of conversation I haven't had before, but I've always sort of wanted to have. I'd really like to hang out with that person more. Call them, text them, ask them if they're willing to hang out more and start spending some time with them. So that's the first step. And then from there, I really think it's going to organically develop. Be very observing of what attracts them, meaning, do they like reading books? Do they like, you know, what kind of books do they like to read? Do they have this kind of love for Christ? Who are their favorite saints? You know, so these are the kind of things that would be important.
Do they have a dangerous addiction? Do they have a dangerous addiction to buying books and eating chocolate chip cookies?
Yes, absolutely. Can they be your accountability partner and your book addiction?
The answer is emphatically no.
So these are the kind of things to remain aware of. And again, I always want to emphasize, though, a freedom and an organicness. What I definitely can warn against is be very wary of trying to force anything. Friendship has to develop naturally. It cannot be forceful. I'm thinking of our friendship in particular, but also other friendships that are healthy in my life in general. There are friendships that I really could never have thought of. And I know that you probably have the same thing. You know, again, I would never think that I'd be best friends with Brandon Vaught. You know, I never think that I would have these kind of friendships with priests or these kind of friendships with different people in the parish or what have you. These are not things I planned or wanted to do. It happened because it's God's grace and it's the Lord's will, and I was open to it, and the Lord eventually developed it. So I'm thankful for that, and I'll encourage our viewers to do the same thing.
You know, to close here, I want to emphasize that I was a little leery about first starting the whole podcast, but then doing this specific episode on friendship, because the Lord has given us this tremendous unearned gift of friendship. And I'm leery about putting that on display in a seemingly braggadocious way to say, look at this beautiful thing that we have, and here's why it's so great. And I know for a lot of people that are struggling and hungering for a similar type of relationship, I want to be wary of inspiring, you know, jealousy or envy or any of that sort. But I hope throughout this episode, we've been able to walk the fine line of hailing all of the unquestionable fruit and goodness of our relationship, but emphasizing it's not from us. It's unearned and unmerited, just like salvation. It was just a gift that the Lord gave to each of us. And so because of that, it's not something we're showing off that we've developed ourselves. It's something the Lord has given. And I think that's a liberating truth, because it means any Christian can receive that same gift from God. It's not something that you have to be good enough to work on and develop and generate of your own efforts. It's an act of grace. It's a gift from the Lord. And so I really hope maybe some of our viewers can comment and let us know in the comment boxes. We hope that this episode gave you a lot to think about when it comes to friendship, but ultimately leaves you hopeful and inspired, and not just, hey, jealous of, you know, I wish I had what Father Blake and Brandon have together. Father Blake, before we wrap up, any final words here about true friendship? Anything you want to leave listeners and viewers?
Again, I would say if you're looking for those kind of friendships, begin praying for them. Begin really asking the Lord, because it's that important. I don't want to make it sound like friendship is just a kind of thing that some people are lucky to get. As you said, Brandon, it's something that every Christian is really called to foster and to enjoy. Jesus himself enjoyed this with his apostles. We know that he was very close friends in particular with John the apostle, the one who leant upon his breast at the Last Supper and heard the Sacred Heart beat within his own ears. Friendship is one of those gifts of Christianity, and no one can have a friendship like Christians can. So start asking the Lord for that grace. Lord, begin first and foremost forming my own heart in holiness, to give me that sister in Christ, to give me that brother in Christ, whom you've created me to join in this journey of holiness, who you've created me to stand arm in arm with, side by side, gazing upon you, so that we can become saints together. And another thing that I'll say is really powerful from these friendships, and I'm thinking about our friendship, Brandon, is you'll highlight each other's vocations in such an amazing way when that compatibility and that blessedness from the Lord is there. My vocation to be a priest, to be a husband of the church, to be a father of God's children has been encouraged by looking at you be a husband and a father. And I hope that it's been mutual.
Likewise.
That whenever we spend time with one another and we see our mutual devotion to our particular vocations, I go and I anoint the sick. There have been times when I was on my way to your house, and on my way there, I got a phone call from someone who was dying, and I had to turn around and go straight back and see that person. Those are my children. They need me. So there was a moment where I sacrificed the good of our friendship for the higher good of my priestly vocation and saving a soul. That just fortifies friendship. That doesn't make it go away. That makes it even stronger. So really asking the Lord for that grace of that kind of friendship is going to be really key. That's the last point that I'll reemphasize, and hope that our listeners can please post any more questions. Maybe there are some things we did not address in this podcast that need to be reiterated in a later podcast, or even through the comments of us responding back. You know that Brandon and I do like to respond to your comments. And so we do encourage you to please do that, because that's really important. This is a very key aspect of Christian vocation, is having good friendships.
So you can find links to all of the books that we've mentioned at burrowshirepodcast.com. That's the website. Be sure to click on the actual title of this episode, and then underneath it, you'll find links to all of the resources, books, things that we've mentioned. Also, I want to ask you guys to share this podcast with friends. Maybe you have a friend with whom you have a shallow relationship. Send them this episode and say, hey, what do you think about this? Or, hey, let's talk about this. Love to discuss this with you, something like that. So maybe use this as a starter log for a more fiery friendship with somebody that you know. Also, if you can, please review this podcast. It takes just a couple seconds for you, but it helps us tremendously. Go on to Apple Podcasts, Google Play, leave a review, because when you review the podcast, it shares it with more listeners. So that's really the best way to help spread it. Either leave a review or share the link, burrowshirepodcast.com. Well, thanks so much for listening, everybody, and we'll see you next time on the Burrowshire Podcast.